always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome into the Hump Day edition of the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. It is Wednesday, April the 17th, 2024. It's 4:05 in the p.m. here, Central Daylight Time. We've got a jam-packed, gigantic show for all you all. I'm joined, of course, back in studio with my co-host, Chris Arps, here today, of course. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good, Speaker Jones. How are you?
Just fresh as a daisy, back from Jefferson City. Usually, Jefferson City is best viewed in your rearview mirror, although there is a lot of things going on underneath the Capitol Dome that we're going to discuss with former Senator, candidate for Congress, Dr. Bob Onder. He texted me as I was flying back down the highway, and he said, "Hey, Missouri Right to Life was wondering if I could come on this afternoon to tell about the fact that the Post-Dispatch, Chris," as we often say, the Post-Disgrace, they've done a huge hit piece on the Decline to Sign campaign, of which we have a poster hanging up in our studio right here about that. And it makes me wonder that perhaps that campaign is being effective, because otherwise, why would the Post-Dispatch bother to do a giant hit piece expose on?
And I think everyone knows that the Post-Dispatch has given up being an objective, unbiased source of news a long time ago. They are a organ of the Democratic Party, the Missouri Democratic Party, the National Party. They know how abortion is going to be a major issue in this campaign. And I think with the megaphone that they have, they are trying to put their thumb on the scales and try to advocate for women's reproductive rights, as they call it, or pro-abortion.
So Bob Onder, who is also a practicing physician, is going to weigh in on the myths, truths that the Post-Disgrace has been trumpeting today. And also, Chris, he'll be able to give us an update along with what I've learned over the last few days as to what's going on in the Missouri legislature. Bob served for 8 years in the Senate and 2 years in the House. And he, of course, still closely follows things up there. There's a lot of big bills that are poised to come across the finish line. But I've got some very troubling news. There are some Republicans in leadership who are actually standing in the way of those bills. Chris, one of them would prevent non-citizens from voting in Missouri. The majority leader, John Patterson in the House, told his caucus on Monday he's not sure he's going to let that bill go or not. I'm wondering, who's John Patterson listening to versus his Missouri Republican House?
And has he said publicly why he is going to take that action? Is there any speculation on why he is taking that action?
He's a bit of a social moderate, and I'm not sure the caucus quite understood that. He voted against the SAFE Act last year, the anti-trans bill, and people were a little scratching their heads on that. He voted against the House joint resolution on IP reform. He's on a different side of the coin than Bob Onder is on the abortion issue. And so that may be a battle there. And, I don't know, maybe he's listening to, there's a bunch of special interest groups that are opposed to IP reform. The realtors are opposed. The, Washington University, hospital system is opposed. The Arnold Foundation is opposed. They're the folks who want to do ranked choice voting. So
give us some history on why, cause a lot of the folks out there might not know this. Well, give us the history of why the realtors are so adamantly against IP reform.
Years and years ago, there was an effort to have a vote on a fair tax in Missouri. So with a fair tax, some fair tax models, you get it replaces the income tax. So you get rid of the income tax, but you also have to close a lot of loopholes. And in some fair tax models, you have a tax on services. Okay. Now, I cannot remember if the fair tax model that was being discussed at the time by the legislature would have involved a tax on services. Realtors do not want a tax on services, on professional services. They don't want a tax on their profession. They ran a ballot initiative to ask Missouri voters, should we prevent extra taxes on services. Missouri voters, of course, voted yes. So the realtors want to preserve the IP process as it is in case they need to use it again.
Yeah, because I know a lot of our listeners may be wondering, you know, this is a common sense type of issue. Non-citizens shouldn't be voting in our elections. Why would any group or any person be against such a common sense measure like that? And, you know, we hear that the realtors are against it, but many of the times we don't hear the reasons why.
Yeah, they're not, I don't think they get into the nuance of the specifics of this. They just want to preserve the process, mm-hmm. right? They like to have the tool of amending our Constitution in a very simple 50% plus one vote. The argument is, why in the world was it ever a good idea to have our Constitution be amended with a 50% plus one vote? People think the amending of the Constitution of the state should be a little more difficult. If you want to amend the statutes and you want to do voter referendums on those, fine. Keep those at 50% plus one. Nobody's changing that. But if you're going to amend our Constitution, if you're going to legislate through our Constitution, just like the U.S. Constitution, it should be a little harder. The U.S. Constitution is two-thirds. Two-thirds of the states would have to agree to amend the U.S. Constitution. So the argument is, why isn't the Missouri Constitution held to that same standard?
And it's almost like, why do you even need a legislature? You can just put right. every important issue before the people and let them vote for it, when, you know, this system of government is supposed to hire or elect representatives to represent you and vote your interest. And hopefully they vote what the majority of their constituents want.
You got it. That's bullseye, Chris. I mean, that's the representative democracy versus mob rule, right? Do we want to take a straw poll every year and decide whatever the fad of the day is, and that's what we're going to put in the Constitution? Not a good idea. So anyway, we'll talk about that with Bob at 5:05 as part of the speaker stump speech. Chris, one of our favorite segments of the week, and my goodness, is he a perfect guest today, given all of the legal matters and the lawfare going on around the country. Zach Smith's going to join us at 4:25. He'll help us break down what's going on in the Donald Trump hush money case, as they're calling it, in New York City, the other matters involving Trump. The fact, Chris, that the U.S. Senate today did what most Senates do best, kill things. They killed the impeachment articles before they even really had a proper hearing. And isn't it just the height of hypocrisy, Chris, to hear Chuck Schumer over the last few weeks say that impeachment shouldn't be used for political purposes? That's the only purpose of impeachment. And Schumer's used it twice against Trump.
I agree 100%. This was a getting rid of this, or not tabling this, or getting rid of the motion for this trial was strictly an exercise in politics. And I also think, too, what's this significant, and there should be more talk about it, and we mentioned yesterday, is that the House and the Senate were on two-week recesses, Easter recesses. They just came back last week. They're coming back this week, and once again, they will be on recess again for another week. So It makes you wonder, is the senator or is Chuck Schumer not wanting to have this trial because they want to be back in their districts campaigning and be on this recess?
Mm-hmm. Given all the problems in the U.S. around the world, not a lot of sense of an urgency in the U.S. Congress, right? They don't seem to be too interested in staying in Washington, D.C. and addressing all of these problems that we talk about here every single day. Chris, we've got Chris's Corner at 4:45.
Yeah, Chris's Corner, we're going to talk about the strange bedfellows of the Teamsters Union and Josh Hawley, the $5,000 endorsement that they sent to him this week. I mentioned that Senator Hawley had made some votes the last couple of years that if you were conservative, that would make you scratch your head a little bit. You wouldn't think that a conservative would be on that side of a particular issue. And I did a little research and found several things that he has been in favor of and have voted for that I could see the likes of Teamsters and maybe other progressive groups would have liked. And not saying that's necessarily a bad thing. It's showing that in an election year that where we have a lot of partisanship, that Senator Hawley is, and he is a divisive figure to some on the left, that he can show that he can reach across and do deals with those on the other side, but still uphold his integrity and his principles.
That'll be a very interesting Chris's Corner. I'm interested in hearing that, and everybody else should be as well. So that'll be around 5:45. As we just discussed at 5:07, we'll have former Senator Dr. Bob Onder on to talk about the Decline to Sign campaign. If you're watching us on any of our streaming platforms that Joey has so generously set up for us every single day, Rumble, Twitter, I guess YouTube, I think we're back on that. Facebook and Instagram, you can see the Decline to Sign poster right here in our studios on our 4K HD cameras. Thank you for streaming us. Thank you for listening to us. We are the number one station in the region for live and local conservative talk. And finally, Chris, to round things out at 525, I saw this book in our studio last week, and it reminded me of a seminar I go to every year on electoral integrity, and I think this is one of the guys that usually speaks at it. And lo and behold, I didn't even talk to Joey about this. You booked Scott Walter, who is the author of Arabella, The Dark Money Network of Leftist Billionaires Secretly Transforming America.
Boy, that sounds like that should be the next blockbuster movie coming out. What a title on that.
Yeah, of course. Katie was the eagle eye who was looking out for some of the books that we get sent to us. And okay, she saw this one, George Soros, big freaky face on the cover, along with Bill Gates and Zuckerberg. And she's like, I think we should talk about this.
Okay, that's where that came from. All right, yeah, I saw that book and I'm like, I think I know the guy who wrote this. Chris, when you hear about the level of money, it's staggering how much money that the left is moving through our electoral system. Oh. It's just, it's mind. Wait till our listeners hear about this. It puts the fundraising you and I talk about on the state level, even the federal level, to shame.
It's staggering just thinking the amount of Zuckerbucks that were spent during the 2020 election to help with these local election boards, supposedly with some of the logistics of running the elections. I mean, he put hundreds of millions of dollars into this. And of course, we all know that it helped shape the elections because most of the money that Zuckerberg was giving were in Democratic jurisdictions, not conservative Republican jurisdictions.
Yeah, and the reason that we don't hear about this on the nightly news so much is because it's really hard to track. It's really hard to track this money. It doesn't get reported through most of the campaign finance systems because it's all done through 501c3s and 501c4s and all these other mechanisms. And look, the right and the left use these, but for whatever reason, the left has put these money operations on steroids. They are greatly outpacing the right on this. And as Chris said, it is in the billions of dollars, and you're going to be shocked when you hear about what they're doing with this money in our elections.
And I'm glad to see that several state legislatures since 2020 have outlawed Zuckerbucks. They've outlawed private money from billionaires and very wealthy people going to election authorities. I don't know if Missouri has passed that or that's been discussion here, but it does need to be, and I think it needs to be outlawed in all 50 states. We don't want billionaires giving money to local election authorities. That would be one thing that I would be happy to have my taxes raised to make sure the election board has enough money to fulfill our elections and not having Soros or Zuckerbergs making up the difference.
Absolutely. And just so folks know who Scott Walter is, he served in the President George W. Bush administration. He was special assistant to the president for domestic policy. Now he runs a great group called the Capital Research Center. They're kind of the watchdog of the Uber left, and boy, when you hear some of these stats, you're going to want to run for cover. But and you're also going to run for the ballot box, because we're going to have to outvote these people, because they're going to lie, cheat, and steal their way through this next set of elections as well. How about that for a lineup today? It's fantastic indeed. Zach Smith at 4:25, he'll be up next. Chris's Corner, the speaker stump speech featuring former Senator Dr. Bob Onder, and Scott Walter on this massive network of dark money on the left. Arabella Advisors is something that we all should know about, and many of us do not, because it's in such the cloak of darkness.
Sounds like something from a mafia movie.
Does sound like it, doesn't it?
That's the mafia's shell company, Arabella.
Yeah. Or like from a James Bond movie or something. Yeah. It does. Mission Impossible. The other thing I saw today, Chris, and listened to quite a bit on the way home, the anti-Semitic leftist Marxism on our major elitist college campuses. I didn't know. It's out. It's almost hard to comprehend that this is happening in the United States of America. Just this hate and vitriol directed at the Jewish people, directed at America itself. A lot of that was seen today on the campus of Columbia University.
Yeah, and it's just a continuation of what we saw earlier in the year when we saw the three Ivy League presidents that were before the House committee who were testifying. Two of those people have lost their jobs because they couldn't come around to saying that, yes, saying that a Jewish person should be harmed or in any sort of way is a crime or a hate crime or hate speech. And I think we have these left-wing professors that are are teaching this oppressed ideology, and that fits perfectly with the situation in Israel, where Israel are the oppressors, the Palestinians are the oppressed. They're teaching that to these young skulls of mush, and we see it fomenting on our college campuses. We see it fomenting on the West Coast and East Coast, and at these airports where these fools are blocking traffic so people can't get to their flights. I think, you know, I'll stem that back to academia, Tim.
How rich is it, Chris, that these hoity-toity kids who come from six- and seven-figure households believe that they're oppressed at Columbia University? You know?
Yeah.
It's really amazing.
And, you know, and some of them may feel that they're oppressed. Some of them, Tim, may have bought into the white privilege ideology, where they've lived a privileged life. They've had advantages that others in the world and the American society haven't had. So maybe a tinge of white guilt playing into that as well. I think every generation of white people have their white guilt figures.
It is bizarre watching it. It really is. And the Columbia University president and her board, big chunk of her cabinet, were up on Capitol Hill, and they gave correct answers to the issue of, is anti-Semitic speech calling for genocide inappropriate on college campuses? They, unlike the folks from NYU and Harvard, they answered yes to that question, and that was the right answer.
And speaking of controversies on college campuses, Dylan Mulvaney,
yes,
the, what do they call her, influencer? Trans influencer is scheduled to speak, I think, Monday at SLU. You have to be a SLU student and have a ID in order to get into this. They're kind of keeping it low key, but it's gotten out. Mm-hmm. I saw comments in the paper from young lady who was the college Republican president. Remember, Tim, we actually had her on the show. She said there were no plans by them to disrupt or protest or anything, but there was a counter speaker that they wanted to have speak on the campus, and the administration told them they couldn't accommodate the security.
I bet Matt Walsh would not be welcome at SLU, would he?
It's security, though. It has nothing to do with his speech. Mm. They just can't accommodate the necessary security it would take to make sure that he's safe, the students are safe, the institution is safe. Well, it sounded like one of their PR people did.
You did. You've got that down. HR can hire you. Let's be clear, though. As far as I know, you'd let me know if you've heard differently. I'm pretty sure Dylan Mulvaney is still a guy.
Dylan still has his package.
He's still biologically a male.
Yes.
Yes, we can say that.
I think you can also look at him, and I think he still has an Adam's apple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's wearing rouge and eyelashes. And
so he's pretending to be a girl.
He's pretending to be a 15-year-old girl,
which
makes
really
it
weird.
Even worse. It's not pretending to be like a woman.
Right.
He's pretending to be like
RuPaul. You know?
Exactly. He's pretending to be a 13-year-old girl.
Which is even freakier.
Which is really, really weird. And we've talked about this many times. You know, the women who aren't up in arms saying that Dylan Mulvaney doesn't represent me as a woman. I'm a middle-aged woman. I've got family. I've got kids. I've got a career. Mm-hmm. I don't act like I'm 12 years old. Or some type of valley girl.
It's demeaning. Yeah. Leftism, as we often say, is a mental disease. It really is. It's a mental disorder.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to have a guy on next who is the opposite of all that. He's brilliant, in fact, and he knows legal issues and matters. Zach Smith, our legal eagle, legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, will be joining Chris and I next to talk about the Trump trials, what's going on at the Supreme Court, and more. The Tim Jones and Chris Harb Show rolls on. Thanks for joining us. 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
The people of this country understand what this is about. They know this is not about actually pursuing someone who has committed a crime. Let's face it, if Alvin Bragg wanted to do that, there are a whole host of criminals tearing apart New York City right now that he could focus on. This is over a $130,000 payment to Michael Cohen. And you think about shutting down the FDR for an hour, it costs the city of New York around $1 million. This doesn't have anything to do with crime or with the right thing happening. It's about politics. People see that, they understand that, and it is why whenever you have situations like this, our fundraising tends to go up.
4:31, and welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Tharp Show. That was RNC co-chair Laura Trump talking about her father-in-law, some of the legal issues that he is facing, and how his fundraising, the campaign fundraising, actually goes up. People are seeing this for what it is. You know, it's Wednesday, Tim, and Wednesday is going to be the day that court will not be in session. So the president was not in session today, but he has had two court sessions already. Let's see what our next guest, our legal eagle, thinks about the case so far.
Oh, it's all perfectly legal.
You are out of order. You're out of order. You're out of order. The whole trial is out of order.
Zach Smith, legal fellow with the Heritage Foundation.
You know, I ask you a lot of predictions. Can you predict what the Supreme Court probably will do with this action? Zach Smith, senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation and co-host of the SCOTUS 101 podcast. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Well, it's good to be with you guys. I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
I am, too. Well, we've had 2 days of this trial so far. The experts, like yourself, Zach, have said this is going to be a 6 to 8 week trial. There was some speculation that it was going to take at least 2 weeks in order to seat a jury. We have 7 jurors already. We're more than halfway there, almost. What's your thoughts on why this jury has been able to been picked so quickly so far?
Well, I think anyone who's picked a jury before will tell you, Chris, it's always the last few that can prove most difficult sometime. But look, it seems like this judge is serious about moving things along relatively quickly. I think that's unfortunate in some sense because we heard the judge say he's not going to allow Donald Trump to attend oral arguments next week at the Supreme Court in what is likely to be one of the biggest cases ever to implicate presidential immunity. We'll have wide-ranging impacts on our constitutional order, regardless of the outcome of that decision. And yet Donald Trump won't be able to attend those oral arguments. And more personally, it's unclear whether or not Donald Trump will be able to attend his son Barron Trump's high school graduation. I think that would be very unfortunate if he has to miss that. But look, these things take time picking the juries. We've seen detailed questionnaires go out to the jurors. We've seen in-depth questions, typical of what you see in many jury selection processes, although really drilling down on some of their political views, what they watch, who they listen to, those sorts of things. And I think we'll continue to see that throughout this jury selection process.
Zach, quick follow-up. Passover is Monday and Tuesday. Has the judge made a decision on postponing the trial for those 2 days? Yeah. He's been saying that he wasn't.
Last I heard, my understanding was that he was going to allow, basically take those days off to allow, Jewish individuals to observe those holidays. I certainly hope that is the case. And if not, I think that would be very outside of the norm, because certainly most judges I know try very hard to accommodate the religious views and schedules of all involved in the criminal justice process.
Zach, stepping back and looking at the big picture here in the borough of Manhattan, a place that I'm very familiar with. I spent nearly 10 years up at Fordham University and then St. John's for law school and worked for a couple years on the island. So Manhattan is something that we frequented. And, you know, New York has gone through its ups and downs and its cycles. But I was there during the Mayor Rudy Giuliani years when New York City experienced a renaissance, a rebirth, when things were much safer in and around all of the 5 boroughs, including Manhattan. Nowadays, Zach, you can't say that, can you? So, Zach, how dystopian is it that Alvin Bragg is pursuing Donald Trump for a pair of Class E misdemeanors on which the statute of limitations technically expired years ago, trying to resurrect those misdemeanors with some unnamed, unknown, ambiguous campaign violation to try and concoct this into a felony? Meanwhile, Zach, real crime has spiked in New York to levels we haven't seen since the 70s. Thanks to social media, Zach, we see a lot of this crime occurring in real time on various Facebook and TikTok videos. Young ladies getting smacked in the face, old grandmas being knocked down and stabbed. Right. I mean, so Zach, I mean, how insane is it that this is the trial of the century, according to CNN and MSNBC, and real criminals apparently are something that the major media networks are ignoring?
Yeah, it's pretty insane, Tim. You know, keep in mind, we've talked about it before, Alvin Bragg actually ran on not prosecuting certain crimes. He released a day one memo that was so radical that even some on the left of the political spectrum were pushing back against it, saying this is too dangerous, this is too bad for our community, too harmful for it. And we've seen Alvin Bragg aggressively pursuing those who engage in either self-defense for themselves or for others. Daniel Penny on the subway.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen him being prosecuted. We've seen the bodega worker who acted in self-defense, was initially prosecuted until those charges were dropped. I thought it was, for whatever it's worth, a somewhat savvy campaign move on Donald Trump's part.
Yes.
He actually went to that bodega yesterday to kind of highlight the differential treatment, the differential injustices. But look, Tim, this is actually very serious because each day that Donald Trump is sitting in that Manhattan courtroom, he cannot be out on the campaign trail doing the ordinary things that presidential campaign candidates can and are expected to be doing. And so this is, we say it all the time, this is an unprecedented situation. But not only have we never before had a former president being criminally prosecuted, we've never had one of the leading candidates for president who's also being criminally prosecuted. And it certainly seems clear this trial is going to significantly impact Donald Trump's campaign schedule for the foreseeable future.
Speaking with Zach Smith, senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation and co-host of the SCOTUS 101 podcast. Zach, I've got a 3-in-1 question for you. On Monday, sorry to do this to you. Supreme Court on Monday took up a case on obstruction for the January 6th protesters. That case, some argue was that statute is overly broad, that it was originally meant for people during Enron when it comes to destroying evidence. I want to ask you about that. One second, Justice Thomas was missing Monday. He was back Tuesday. There was no explanation given on why he was out. Do we know more about that? And third, why is Justice Thomas now beginning to ask more questions during the proceedings than he did in his earlier years on the court?
All great questions, as always, Chris. So let me take this in lightning round fashion. For your first case, the Fisher case, that's absolutely a monumental case the court will hear. Not only does it potentially impact many of the January 6th defendants, it could also impact some of the charges pending against Donald Trump. I think during the oral argument, we saw kind of an interesting tip by Justice Neil Gorsuch, basically asking whether or not pulling the firearm could be considered to violate this law and subject someone to many years in federal prison. You remember, that's what a Representative Jamal Bowman said some time ago. And yet he was simply, cited for a very low-level misdemeanor offense. So this is a very serious case. Obviously, it's going to have far-reaching implications and could be a way for the court to indirectly address some of the charges against Donald Trump without kind of the extra political aspect of Donald Trump's name actually being on the case. Now, for your second question, why was Justice Thomas absent? Chris, we don't know. I certainly hope it was nothing serious, so we wish him well. We want many, many more years on the bench from Justice Thomas. And so we hope he is doing well and certainly seems to be back to full steam. So not sure why that absence was there, although he'll still participate in the case, just using the audio and the transcripts from that argument session. And then as to why he has started asking more questions, I think it has to do with the change in the argument format that the court has adopted after COVID. Justice Thomas always said that he found it very distasteful and unhelpful how justices immediately jump in, cut off the advocates, not let them make their points, and not really have a conversation. It was more kind of like a free-for-all with people talking over each other. During COVID, when everything was done telephonically, the court did away with that free-for-all format and let each justice take time and ask questions in seriatim fashion. And the arguments went much longer, but were much more helpful and in-depth. And the court has retained some aspect of that new form of argument, with each justice getting a chance to ask questions, with the arguments going much longer, so that there's more of a substantive conversation happening instead of kind of the free-for-all that takes place in a very compressed time frame. And I think Justice Thomas thinks that is a better use of his time to engage in that type of questioning and this type of format.
Zach, you hit a home run with that answer, my friend.
I'll take it when I can get it.
As always, as always. Zach, would love to have your comment on another one of the big issues of the day, and that would be the short-lived impeachment trial of Alejandro Mayorkas. Zach, your comments on what appears to be just another example of the two tiers of justice that occur in this country every single day. Donald Trump had not one but two impeachments. There was a trial of some sort on each one of those, but today Democrats decided that the impeachment process, it shouldn't be political, and we've got more important things to do. I mean, if there's anyone who's committed a dereliction of duty, which is what Andrew McCarthy said today was exactly what the impeachment process is for, you would argue it was Alejandro Mayorkas. Now, you could say, well, Joe Biden was just telling him that what to do, and so they should have impeached Joe Biden instead, and I would agree with that. But Zach, your comments on the farce that Chuck Schumer made of the impeachment trial that lasted for all of about 30 seconds in the U.S. Senate.
Well, I don't think I can really say what deserves to be said on public airwaves, trying not to get you guys fined or anything like that. But look, it's absolutely a travesty. I think Alexander Mayorkas has failed to do his duty to enforce the immigration laws that are on the books, has failed to do his duty to keep our country safe. And look, he may be acting at the direction of Joe Biden or others in the White House. I have no doubt that in some sense he is. But keep in mind, Tim, each cabinet-level officer, really any officer of the United States and many employees of the United States, most, in fact, swear an oath to faithfully execute their duties and to uphold the relevant laws and the Constitution of the United States. And so his failure to do that should subject him personally to the consequences of that failure, up to and through a potential impeachment. So the fact that this was given a short shrift, that, you know, the normal process of a trial we nearly would expect to see didn't take place, I think it's really shortchanging the American people on this very important issue.
Zach Smith, SCOTUS 101 podcast. Will there be a fresh one this Friday?
Absolutely.
Yes.
The court is firing on all cylinders. They're hearing cases. They're issuing opinions. And so we have a lot to talk about on this week's SCOTUS 101.
Any teas, more teas than that, Zach?
You'll have to stay tuned and listen in. I will give you one quick tea.
All right.
There'll be a good interview this week on a new book involving DEI, racial discrimination, and how that fits into our current legal system. I hope everyone will stay tuned for that conversation that GC is hosting this week.
Can't wait to talk to you about that. You know, we had Dr. Carol Swain on the show yesterday talking about DEI, so she is a good person to talk about that, as well as you are. We've been speaking with Zach Smith, Senior Legal Fellow at the Heritage Foundation and co-host of the SCOTUS 101 podcast. Zach, thank you so much for your time, sir, and we'll speak with you again next Wednesday.
Yes, great talking to you guys. Take care.
Thank you. 4:47, Chris's Corner coming up. We'll talk about Josh Hawley's populism, for lack of better words. He received a $5,000 check from the Teamsters. That may surprise a lot of people. But if you look at some of the votes and some of the legislation that Senator Hawley has proposed over the last year or two, you may not be surprised. We'll talk more about that on Chris's Corner. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
You raised concerns about the 787, and so they transferred you to the 777, right?
Well, yes. Initially, they just cut me off of all the meetings.
Oh.
They took my name out. And then so I was just doing nothing. I wasn't informed of what. Then they transferred me. And they do it pretty stealthy. Oh, we have a job over here. We want you to go over there. So they move you down there. And, you know, I come from like 40 years of engineering background. So when I see, and I've taken a lot of stress classes, even though I'm not a specialist on that. But when there's a problematic area that you see, you can recognize.
4:51 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, and that was a Boeing quality engineer testifying at a committee hearing. There you heard Josh Hawley. You know, Josh Hawley is in his first term. He is up for election this year. He has been truly a senator for the people, not what you'd expect for a Republican, quote-unquote, senator. He's taken on a lot of populist ideas, and I think we're going to explore more of that on Chris's Corner.
Chris, Chris, Chris. Chris. Chris.
And if you don't know, now you know.
And now, Chris's Corner.
You know, my real first brush or contact with Senator Hawley was back in 2018 after he had won the nomination to Republican senator for our great state of Missouri. And my wife and I, with a few other folks, were honored to be on the tarmac to greet him and President Trump, who they were both flying in from Washington, D.C. I think Senator Hawley, at the time, he wasn't senator, of course, was having a fundraiser back here in St. Louis, and so he was riding on Air Force One back here to St. Louis. Those of us at the airport were able to shake his hand, take pictures with the president, sign autographs, the whole nine. Senator Hawley was and still is a rising star within the Republican Party. He had the support of one of our most senior senators, Jack Danforth. But as all of us know, that relationship has soured dramatically. Senator Danforth has said that his support of Senator Hawley was one of the biggest mistakes that he had ever made. He did not expect the senator to be as right-wing as he turned out to be, which you'd expect. I mean, Senator Hawley, he is an evangelical. He is a MAGA Tea Party Republican. He was endorsed by President Trump during that primary. He is a conservative. And so the direction that Hawley has governed and the legislation that he has proposed should not shock a lot of people. Mm. What has shocked a lot of people regarding Hawley is, you know, we've seen it with the parties. The Republican Party has turned into the party of the blue-collar, working-class, more type of person. The Democratic Party has been the more college-educated, white-collar, hedge fund party. We've seen a switch in that support. We've seen it with President Trump, who is a billionaire, but he gets a lot of support from blue-collar workers. And we see that rubbing off some with Josh Hawley. Again, he is up for real election. And earlier this week, he surprisingly got a $5,000 check from the Teamsters Union, which traditionally Teamsters unions give their money to Democrats. They rarely, if ever, give their money to Republicans. They have not yet endorsed President Biden for president. President Trump has been fighting very hard for the Teamsters vote, and who knows, he may just get that vote. We don't know. But as I said, you know, Senator Hawley, expect him to be pretty conservative. But some of the things that I want to go over with you, some of the things that he has proposed in legislation may surprise you. One of them that's been pretty high profile, which shouldn't surprise you, that he is in favor of trying to get relief for those in North County who live along Coldwater Creek in order to help with some of the mysterious diseases and illnesses that those folks have been afflicted with. He's been trying to get money within the federal budget to help with those folks. He has not been successful so far, but he is trying very diligently to get that happened. One of the things that he has sponsored has been called the Pelosi Act. This is Senator Hawley. Ah. That stands for Preventing Elected Leaders from Owning Securities and Investment Act. Now, the Pelosi Act would prohibit members of Congress and their spouses from holding or trading stocks while in office. You know, there are a lot of Republicans in the House and the Senate that are against that bill, Democrats as well. And as we've speculated and talked about many times on the show, that there have been a lot of politicians that have come into their service at the beginning not having much of a net worth, but by the time they leave, they are multi-millionaires, basically having the same salary for 20 to 25 years. One of the things that Senator Hawley sponsored was the Ending Corporate Influence on Elections Act, which bans publicly traded corporations from making independent expenditures and creating political ads or other election communications. It would also ban them from contributing to super PACs. Mm. So, you know, that is the Citizen United case that they'll said that corporations, just like unions, can give money to campaigns in order to advocate for themselves. Senator Hawley has basically put out a bill to overturn Citizen United, not allow corporations to do political work, which is that's pretty populist, and I would think. And he's also is proposing a 3-year program that would increase worker wages in 2021 but it's paid by taxpayers rather than employers. Those making below $16.50 per hour would receive a refundable tax credit worth 50% of the difference, paid out in a quarterly installment. The $16.50 could increase over time as it would be tied to the consumer price index. The credit would only apply to 40 hours or less of weekly work. And here's the conservative part of that bill, of course. Only American workers with valid Social Security numbers would be eligible, meaning non-U.S. citizens and undocumented immigrants would be excluded. So those are three pieces of legislation there that you wouldn't expect necessarily a conservative Republican to be sponsoring. But when you see that legislation, you're not surprised that Holly's getting a $5,000 check from the Teamsters.
You know, Chris, just to prove we're not sycophants here, I agree with Josh Hawley on a lot of things, but on the worker issue, I will disagree with him. I love that the workers support him, but if he truly wanted to help workers, he would be for right to work and not against it, like he recently said.
507, we'll speak with Dr. Bob Onder, and 524, Scott Walter, president of Capital Research Center. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.